Legacy Finance Committee meeting to order, and members will be coming in, and I know some other members have some bills up in other committees. We just had floor session, so our apologies to our guests today, but so can I move the? So I'd like to move the minutes. We have two sets of minutes, and Representative Heitzman, if you had an opportunity to peek at the minutes for January 25th, and if so, would you like to move those, please?
I would move the minutes from January 25th, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any questions to the January 25th minutes? Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The minutes are passed. And then we have another set of minutes for February 1st. And Representative Heitzman, would you be willing to move the minutes for the February 1st as well?
I would move the February 1st minutes as well, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Heitzman. Any questions regards to those minutes? Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed? Minutes are approved. Thank you very much to Representative Heitzman, and thank you for bringing a star guest today. We've had other members introduce ourselves, but please, as a guest, would you be willing to introduce yourself and then maybe mention a park use that you've done, or since we have Parks Day, or an outdoor heritage, an arts project? You said you were doing some art maybe on the house floor even, or crafting.
My name is Jean Heinzman. On the floor, I was doing crochet, and we like to go to Cuyuna.
Thank you. Well, welcome. That is a beautiful park. If you have never been there, I highly, highly recommend it. It's certainly a treasure, even a worldwide treasure, I believe. You've got worldwide recognition. Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there going to be an opportunity for us to finally ride Cuyuna together, Mr. Chairman?
I'd very much in favor of that. Riding the Red, it's called. They have red clay, and it's Riding the Red, I think, is their nickname, right? Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Chair. It's red dirt, so more often than not, we refer to the red dirt. It's somewhat like Maui, but not volcanic, so you can figure it out. It's the Iron Range.
Thank you. Well, this morning we're continuing on the path of our presentations, and we've kind of moved through different areas of our funds, and now we're transitioning to the parks and trails and folks. And if you'd like to come up, and I think everybody's here now, and then kind of go through, I believe you have a presentation that you've put together for us, and so we'll happily hear that. If members have questions, please ask them, and we have some time allotted for this and to do a deeper dive. So there's basically 14.25% of our funds go to parks and trails, and maybe you're going to talk about that, but it's historically, it's been nice how the three systems that often get our funds, Greater Minnesota, the Metro Council areas, and the DNR, all come forward and then present. So I don't know what your plan is, who's first, but go ahead when you're ready, please.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, and good morning, members of the committee. My name is Lisa Barajas. I'm the Executive Director of the Community Development Division at the Metropolitan Council. And on behalf of the Parks and Trails Legacy Partnership, and along with Ann Pierce, the State Parks Director at the Minnesota DNR, and Renee Madsen, the Executive Director of the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission, we do thank you for the opportunity to present the Parks and Trail Legacy Overview today. So we'll get into some of those details, Chair Lilly, that you were speaking to. Thank you. So we are the three Parks and Trail Legacy Partner Agencies, Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission, the Metropolitan Council, and the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. So we are responsible for overseeing Minnesota's parks and trails of state and regional significance, which is the focus of the 25-year Parks and Trails Legacy Plan. And you'll see on the right-hand side of the screen sort of a schematic there of the variety of different parks and trails opportunities within the state of Minnesota and where our responsibilities fall is in that those two middle circles. In 2008, Minnesotans passed the Clean Water, Land, and Legacy Amendment, which increased the state sales tax by 0.3% for 25 years to provide new funding for better habitat, water quality, arts and culture, and, of course, parks and trails, what we're here to talk about today. The pie chart here in front of you shows the four parts of the Legacy Fund, and as Chair Lilly noted, we'll be focusing on the legacy, the parks and trails portion, which receives about 14% of the total fund. The vision created in the 25-year Parks and Trails Legacy Plan is to provide a seamless, accessible, and welcoming system of parks and trails for all Minnesotans. We are now just over halfway through the 25-year legacy implementation period, and we can confidently tell you that Parks and Trails Legacy Fund is having a profound impact on our three parks and trail systems in Minnesota. The 25-year Parks and Trails Legacy Plan identifies four strategic pillars that are illustrated here on the slide. Connecting people in the outdoors, that includes creating welcoming environments, conducting more effective marketing and outreach, and providing outdoor skill building and programming for people of all abilities. The second pillar, acquiring land and creating opportunities. The work here includes accelerating land acquisition, making high priority trail connections, filling critical gaps, and developing near-home, convenient recreational opportunities. The third pillar is taking care of what we have. As our outdoor system, recreation system ages, it continues to need regular reinvestment to ensure safe and high-quality opportunities continue to be available to all Minnesotans. This pillar includes investing in both the built environment as well as the natural environment. And finally, the fourth pillar is coordinating among partners. And this pillar represents this critical partnership that works toward creating a seamless system of state and regional parks and trails. It includes shared research to better understand the needs of our visitors, and it includes investing in technologies to make it easy for people to find what they want when they want it. It also includes supporting our Parks and Trails Legacy Advisory Committee, which provides vital input into how our legacy work is implemented. So today, all three partners, continue to work together to engage with the public in many ways to advance the goals in the Parks and Trails Legacy Plan. As stated in the last slide, this includes the Parks and Trails Legacy Advisory Committee that provides guidance and champions progress toward the 25-year Parks and Trails Legacy Plan. The 17-member volunteer body helps keep the partners on track and well integrated. The work also includes joint projects between the three partners here, DNR, the Council, and the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission. These projects help us to work together to move us toward a more seamless system of nature-based outdoor recreation. Examples of our work include developing user-friendly websites, coordinated research projects, and exploring how parks and art can help reach new visitors. The pandemic underscored the critical importance of our state and regional parks and trails to all Minnesotans. And if you were out and about in the state over the last couple of years, you may have noted yourself the increased visitorship, whether it was folks riding, walking, or biking on trails, or folks taking weekend jaunts out to their state park system with overflowing parking lots. I experienced that myself going out the weekends with my children. People visited our units in record numbers during this very difficult time, finding refuge and well-being in the outdoors and opportunities to engage and see friends and neighbors and family in a safe setting. We found many of the visitors were new to our parks and trails as well, and now we need to work extra hard to ensure that these visitors continue to return to our systems to share these opportunities with their friends and families. So the images on the slide here really illustrate a range of ways that our systems adapted during the pandemic to help Minnesotans continue to experience the great benefits of our systems. So next we'll move to the part of the presentation where each of the three agencies shares an overview of our individual systems and how the Parks and Trail Legacy Fund is making this a critical contribution. So I'll kick us off with the metro system. And just the opportunity and impact that the Legacy Fund has had on our recreational system, ensuring that we are able to meet the changing needs of our region's residents as we continue to grow. So this is a map of our regional parks and trail system in the 7-county metro area and the 10 regional parks implementing agencies that are responsible for owning and operating the portions of the regional system, in addition to providing local parks and trails opportunities as well. So they play a critical role in helping to connect folks in this region to opportunities right in their own backyard. And this partnership is critical to, like I mentioned earlier, providing that seamless system of nature-based parks and trails in the metro area that are really in many ways an introduction to even greater opportunities in greater Minnesota as well. So the dark green parts on this map, which I'm sure are a little bit hard to see because this is a 3,000 square mile area map, but you can see some very large parks. Most of our parks, the larger portions of them, range from 100 to 700 acres in size, and we have a network of existing regional trails that connect those systems across. And I'm getting ahead of myself because I realize that's also on the next slide here. It is a nationally renowned system, and many people think of our system as the state parks of the metro area. Minneapolis and St. Paul often receive accolades for some of the rankings of first or second or top 10 park systems in the state, across the nation, not just in the state, but across the nation. Our system is made up of 56 regional parks and park reserves, 8 special recreation features like Como Zoo, and 55 regional trails with over 415 miles of interconnected opportunities. In total, the metro regional system is almost 55,000 acres of parkland open to all Minnesotans. And we have a staggering 65 million visits to our system in 2021 alone. The Parks and Trails Legacy Fund helps make the metro system a true gateway to all of Minnesota's amazing outdoor opportunities, including the state park system and the Greater Minnesota Regional Park System. For the metro regional park system, legacy funds are distributed by a statutorily derived formula. So 90% of the funds are distributed by this formula directly to the 10 regional parks implementing agencies. This formula takes into account the relative sizes of each of the implementing agencies' parks, the number of local people that they serve, the number of non-local people they serve, and that their parks and trails attract, and how much it costs to run each agency's portion of the regional system. The remaining 10% provides funding for land acquisition through the Counts Park Acquisition Opportunity Fund. For each acquisition, legacy funds provide 45% of the total cost. The Metropolitan Council contributes another 30% of the acquisition cost, and the regional parks implementing agencies provide the final 25% of the cost. These funds are critical as we continue to grow out our regional trail system, as our region continues to grow, and we're able to grow with the growing demand that our residents have for connections and trails, but also building out the remaining portions of the regional parks and acquiring in holdings and other similar types of lands. The council coordinates the Metropolitan Regional Park System legacy project selection process, but it is the locally elected boards and commissions from the 10 regional parks implementing agencies that select the projects. Council staff review all projects for consistency with council-approved park and trail long-range plans, as well as ensuring that the proposed projects meet all state-required guidelines. So these are just a few examples of how the Parks and Trail Legacy Fund is having a big impact on across our metro region. The slides are organized around the pillars of the 25-year plan. So on this slide, you'll see two of the pillars, connecting people and the outdoors and acquiring land. One major area of focus for our Parks and Trails Legacy investments is creating introductory experiences for new visitors. Here are two examples from Three Rivers Park District on the left, and that's in western Hennepin County. The first photo shows this year's Nordic Ski Opener at Elm Creek Park Reserve, and if you didn't have an opportunity to get out there, I highly recommend it. All age levels, all experience levels, including brand new beginners, whether you're 5 years old or 55 or 85 years old, a really great opportunity to be out with family, and it's such a welcoming environment with free ski rentals, free gear, all the things just to get people out in the outdoors, as well as some introductory classes. I went out there with with my family at this year's Nordic Ski Opener. And just the environment of folks supporting one another. Skis are not easy for everybody, and that's not an easy course to ski on either, but folks are really supportive and was just a great introductory experience. The second photo shows a drawing of the new Mississippi Gateway Regional Park and Visitor Center. And this park is being completely redesigned to act as a gateway for new visitors to nature and outdoor recreation. Construction will be beginning just this spring in 2023, so we're really excited for that to come to fruition. On the right-hand side of the slide here, it describes our land acquisition program from 2020 to 2022. And as I had described earlier, 10% of the Metro System's legacy funding is dedicated toward land acquisition across the entire region. And over these last 3 years, we have acquired over 375 acres of land, and almost $5 million in legacy funds further leveraged over $3 million of council funds and over $2.5 million of regional park implementing agency funds for those acquisitions. And then the final two pillars here on the left-hand side of the slide, we highlight the Create Opportunities pillar. At Indian Mounds Regional Park in St. Paul, the Parks and Trails Legacy Fund is making a big difference. In response to community concerns about a proposed water feature at the park, the city pivoted and used Parks and Trails Legacy Funds to develop a cultural landscape study. The process included engaging Indigenous communities in decision-making about this culturally significant site. The work to transform this park in partnership with Indigenous communities continues today and really is a model for including cultural resources as part of our regional system. On the right-hand side of the slide, we highlight Cottage Grove Ravine Regional Park. Again, the Legacy Fund was instrumental in helping replace a worn-out visitor shelter with a beautiful community asset, the Ravine Landing Visitor Center. And if you haven't been out there, I highly recommend it. It's a beautiful landscape, and in the summer, you'll even get to experience the goats that are used to help keep invasive species out of the park. It's just a great opportunity to be out in the ravine. And I just wanted to end with my final slide here, providing a summary of the Parks and Trails legacy allocations for the last two biennia. These allocations are making a big difference in our metro regional parks and trails system. So I know it's a big table of slides. I've talked a lot today, but I really want to thank you and turn over next to Ann Pierce from the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources to share about their legacy work.
Thank you, Director. Nice job. I believe we have a question from Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director, first I want to comment, since a new resident here, the $11 million for St. Paul Trails, I use the Riverwalk a lot. I walk it with my dog. It's quite a unique trail. I'm a trail person. I'm from Ely. I've designed trails, built trails from nothing. It's very unique. Underneath I-35, the whole thing is just really unique. I could see why it's so much money, you know, trying to put that in a populated area. Mm-hmm. But one of the questions I had about acquiring land, and this is something that I deal with up north, is you're purchasing land for the parks, but are you purchasing right of way also for the trails? Is that part of the purchase, Mr. Chair? Thank you.
Director Barras.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is correct. The acquisition is both for parkland as well as trail land. Sometimes that trail acquisition is through right-of-way. Sometimes it's purchasing larger corridors of land, especially for some of our destination trails that include a significant natural resource corridor as part of that trail experience.
Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Ms. Pierce, Director Pierce.
Chairman, committee members, thank you. I'm Ann Pierce, and I'm the director of the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources Parks and Trails Division, and I'm very excited to be here and talk to you about what we're doing in conjunction with our partners with the state parks and trails system. And get my which arrow to turn correctly. Did it move? Yep. Okay. There we go. All right. So Minnesota State Parks, we have a very comprehensive system. If you look at this slide, it gives you a few highlights. Since 1891, Minnesota State Park System has grown to what we have today. And it's one, it's a nationally recognized system. It's the envy of many places. We have 75 state parks and state recreational areas, 25 multi-use state trails, 35 state water trails, plus we also have state forest recreation areas, public water accesses, fishing piers, among other things. In 2020, during right at the beginning of the pandemic, we had 12 million state park visitors. So one of the things that, one of the pillars for the legacy is to connect people to the outdoors. And that was a real opportunity to kind of build that connection and hopefully continue to have people come back to the outdoors and then the state parks and the regional parks and the, all the parks around the state itself. We had 3 million state trail visitors in that same time period. In our system, we have 24,600 miles of grant and aid trails. We have 2,400 of those are OHV trails, 700 are ski trails, and 21,500 are snowmobile trails. We have 1,500 miles of developed state trails, with 660 of those miles being paved trails. So a very comprehensive system, especially in the in light of the partnership with the other systems around the state. So I am also going to talk on pillars from the legacy plan, and I'm going to start with connecting people to the outdoors. A couple of things you'll see on this slide is one of the projects that we have going forward, which people may or may not have heard about, but it's the Library Pass program. Our primary strategy for connecting people to the outdoors is trying to promote innovative programming, providing education and interpretation, and also outdoor skill training. And to do this, we focus also on marketing and promotions of those special events to get people to come to the system and try things out and hopefully enjoy and come back to that system. And also, to encourage people to understand the importance of our outdoor and natural resources to our way of life for Minnesotans. So I'll just talk a little bit about some of the things we think about as we're doing this. We want to reduce barriers, we want to improve access for people, and we want to build skills. So we want people to be, feel comfortable coming to the system, and doing that, we build their skills so that they understand what to expect and things like that. So the Library Pass was launched in June of 2021, and it provides library patrons the ability to check out a free state parks pass and get entry into the state park system for free. And initially, we had 71 libraries. Currently, I think we have 122, and we're continuing to expand that. More than 1,900 state park passes were checked out in the first year that we had this up and running. And since then, with the expansion that we've done, we've had more than 2,100 that year. So the second year, 2,100 checkouts of those passes. So a real opportunity for people to try to do something that maybe they haven't done before, and there might have been a barrier of cost in doing that. Again, it's the purpose is to provide free park access, and in the first 6 months of that program, so you know the first half year, we had over 1,500 people check those out. We did a survey of people, and we found that 95.7% of those would use the Library Park Pass again. We found that 98.8% of those using the library pass would come back to a state park again, which is important because we want to continue people to enjoy what we have in Minnesota. And we also noticed that a lot of the people that were using those state parks, some of the things that they enjoyed were kind of those low barrier activities, things such as hiking, picnicking, sightseeing, photography, things like that. The Parks and Legacy dollars will help us in to continue this program through 2025 and increase the number of passes that we have out there, working with the regional library system and increasing the number of people that can enjoy our state park system. Another thing that we have a program looking at is in the middle picture is our multicultural marketing program. So what we did was we took a newsletter called The Trailblazer, and we really re-envisioned that to increase the diverse representation within that newsletter and trying to reach out to new audiences and to better reflect the diversity of state parks and trails users that are out there and how they are connecting to our natural resources and our state and regional park systems. Finally, on this one, if you look at the third picture that's there on your right, that is the ICANN program. So one of the things that we know is that people want to feel comfortable when they're doing activities. And one way that people feel uncomfortable is that when they don't really know what to do. They don't know how to do it. They don't know what to expect. They don't know. They don't have the equipment. They don't even know what equipment they need. And so one of the things we developed was what's called an ICANN program. And this is a big part to get Minnesotans out into the outdoors and give them an opportunity to learn how to do various things. So if you look at that slide, you can see the ICANN program for I Can Camp, I Can Paddle, and I Can Mountain Bike. And what we do in that is we provide friendly instruction for novices and the necessary equipment. So they don't need to bring anything. They don't need to have the equipment. They don't need to understand even how to use the equipment. They come, and it's no expense is necessary for them. So it's an opportunity for parents who may not have grown up getting outdoors to take their kids, introduce them to the outdoors with no uncertainty about how they're going to go about doing things. A couple other pillars that we're looking at is take care of what we have. And if you look at our park system, we have a large park system. There's a lot of trails. There's a lot of infrastructure in those. And one big piece of that, and what we have heard from the public, is that they want us to maintain what we have. So they want us to create new opportunities, but they also want us to maintain what we have. And that does take an effort, and that's where the take care of what we have comes in. And so part of providing a welcoming experience to people in the parks and trail users is to meet their expectations. So they want to have quality facilities. This is an example of a renovated shower and restroom building at a state park, and thinking about making sure that people have access to those buildings, that they can get into those buildings. It may be ADA accessibility that we need to think about in those systems because, again, some of our infrastructure was built earlier in the century or in the last century or even in the last century, and it doesn't always have those amenities to make it easy for people, all people, to access what they need. And then also creating opportunities. So if you look at the picture on your right, this is an example of the Glacial Lakes State Trail. And this is a connecting piece with the trail and with Sibley State Park. So people can plan their trip to go down a nice long bike ride on this trail and then connect to a state park and maybe go there and camp or go there and have a picnic and make it a really comprehensive experience for them and also welcoming and easy to use. Sorry. And then just a little bit more on that creating opportunities. I think probably many of you have heard about the Shiprock Creek Campground. And I just wanted to highlight that is a continuing project that we're continuing to work on. But this is a really nice example of where partnerships come in. So the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources created an opportunity. This was part of the original park plan, and so we created an opportunity to create very accessible campgrounds that we're also connected to other systems. And so not only to a state trail system, but also to a county trail system. We partnered with Lake County to get this work accomplished. We also partnered so that people wouldn't have to access the park by going on a road. We partnered with MnDOT to get a tunnel under a bridge through. And so a lot of opportunities for us to think about how do we make this experience enjoyable, comfortable, where people really want to go and experience it and also feel comfortable with what they're experiencing and to have those connections so that they can enjoy all that areas have to offer. And another example, just we brought up Cuyuna as we were doing our introductions. Cuyuna is another focal point, and yes, it is internationally known, nationally known. I have friends that are in other states, and they keep calling me and saying, Cuyuna, we want to go to Cuyuna. And I'm like, you should go to Cuyuna. And we're continuing to invest in the mountain biking opportunities that are out there. So that's another example of creating opportunities. Just really quickly, I want to describe how we come up with our projects and figure out how we're going to work on things. We start out with early strategic discussions, and that we have those discussions with the Parks and Trails Legacy Advisory Committee, and we use the 25-year Parks and Trails plan to help guide us in what those strategic directions are. We then work within the programs that are developing the projects to set those priorities and the objectives for each of those projects. And then we move on to develop a project list and begin to implement those projects. But as we do that, we have a review of the Parks and Trails Legacy Advisory Committee of those projects that we are working on. And then I wanted to just point out, we talked about the four pillars that we're working on, and I wanted to direct you to mainly that pie chart because I think in the slide that's going to be the easiest thing to see. If you look at what that expenditures look like, we have about 20% that goes to connecting people to the outdoors. We have another about 20% to create new opportunities, and then we listened to what people were saying, and we know we have a large and extensive system that is not young, and so we also focus on a little bit more than half of that is focused on taking care of what we have. And if you're delving into the numbers, we will have new numbers to update those numbers once the new forecast comes out. So these may be a little bit off, but the forecast will update it after the forecast comes out. And with that, I am going to hand it over to Renee.
Thank you, Director Pierce. Was there any questions for Director Pierce? Yeah. Representative Heitzman.
So looking at the slide, and I forget which pillar that it fell under, but taking care of what we have, I see the example there is a new shower building and some kind of a description. And Mr. Chair, this is going to be a bigger conversation, I think, this session, but a concern that I hear constantly from folks who are on the trails and visiting our parks is areas that are much different than the photo, and they see infrastructure in some cases, not everywhere, but in some cases, that really needs a lot of help. And taking care of what we have is a theme here, but it is new. So if we could talk just for a few seconds about kind of what we're doing to make sure that we're taking care of what we have, and then Mr. Chair, I'd have a comment, just a few things that we've been thinking about, you and I and others, that I want to mention, and we'll talk a little more about that.
Director Pierce.
Thank you, Chairman. Yes, so this is a replacement shower building, so it is a new shower building, and it gets exactly at what you're talking about. You know, the system has needs, definite needs for maintenance. And as we try to do that maintenance, the longer it takes to do that maintenance, it develops into replacement needs. And so what we're hoping to do is create an opportunity for us to get on a schedule for that maintenance so we won't have to create new shower buildings. But at times, depending on the age of that shower building or the condition of that shower building, it might be more effective to just replace that shower building. So this is a new shower building that did replace one that was already there. But you're right. Yep.
Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, so the other side of this is, and I love hearing you say a replacement of infrastructure. I mean, that's unfortunately where we're at with a lot of this around the state. And trails fall into this category too, of course. I have acreage on both sides of the Paul Bunyan Trail as it comes through Nisswa, and I see what we're facing there with nearly a 20-year-old asphalt system.
Yep.
And I'm just going to use this space quickly to mention that, you know, we do have the renewal of the ENRTF coming forward, and it's a whole different subject area, but I'm just going to float this publicly. 60% of dollars collected from the lottery drop directly into the general fund. And I'm going to mention that I think that's something that needs to be looked at very closely, because all of these funds, whether it's ENRTF or legacy dollars, you know, at the moment, don't do as much of the taking care of what we have as I think what Minnesotans would like. And we're not going to be talking about the legacy amendment for quite a while, so ENRTF is the next thing to be discussed. And I think that all of us together, Mr. Chair, in a bipartisan way, and I've reached out to the governor's office on this also, need to be trying to figure out, can we more strategically direct dollars towards that effort? Because if we're all being honest here today, it's a drop in the bucket in terms of what we're doing now to take care of what we have compared to the need. And I hope that my suggesting that and reaching out to folks begins that conversation, and we really do think long and hard about what a renewal looks like if we're going to do that in the ENRTF category. And then statutorily what we need to be doing to make sure that we're enhancing. And it seems that there's been some resistance to that, and I'm trying to push back on it. And I think there's a lot of like minds right now in the legislature that could come together and figure out, you know, a really good opportunity is right here. We can figure out what that looks like and build or rebuild, you know, Minnesota's infrastructure and park systems and trail systems.
Thank you, Representative Heitzman. Representative Jha.
Thank you, Chair. My first question is, what's your policy on drone usage on state parks?
Thank you, Chairman, committee members. So I may have to look at Laura to answer this a little bit better. I'm getting everything up to speed, and Parks and Trails is huge, so there's lots of pieces that go into it. But my understanding is that drones are not allowed to take off and land within a state park system. And, of course, flying over, I think that's a different piece than taking off and landing in a state park. And part of that is safety and privacy.
Representative Jha.
Sure. And my second question is, do you guys keep track of the demographic of people using these parks? And if so, how do you do that?
Director Pierce.
Chairman, committee members, so we have surveys that we have an annual parks survey, and we ask that type of demographic questions on those surveys. So it is dependent on people filling out the survey and people being willing to share that type of demographic information. But we have it consistently, so you can get trends, even though it may not be the exact accurate number, you can actually see the trends throughout the years.
Representative Jha.
That's all. I forgot about the question. Thank you.
You can ask it in a bit if you like. Director Pierce, I have a quick question. So can you give us data on the ICANN program? Because I'm not sure I see how much goes into that area. And then you kind of just, you said, is it just the three ICANN programs, the camp and the bike and the whatever the other one was?
So if we don't have the data offhand, we can get you the data. Just if you, like, is there specific information you're looking for? How many people participate?
Well, just Director Pierce, so just generally how much goes into that program? I believe that is a fully legacy
yes.
started initiative, but how much goes into it? And then maybe adding to Representative Cha's question, if we could have demographic information of who, I think in that case you probably can really identify who's showing up, you know, to take, you know, to, and, you know, economically you could kind of have a sense, or you, or racially, or, mm-hmm. you know, those sort of things. So I would like a deeper dive on that, on the data on that for all of us, please.
Thank you, Chairman. We will get you that information.
Okay, thank
so you can share it.
But... I think you,
yes, I remember my question.
Oh,
not sure. My third question was, did you know, literature, right? You know, handouts and digital literature. Do you have them in other languages? And I know printing could be costly, but, you know, do you have a digital option for other languages to maybe print out maps and parks and trails?
Director Pierce.
Chairman, committee members. So we do have some printed materials, but in general, that's not as heavy as it has been before, just the printed materials, just because that's not the direction people are using materials. We do have some in other languages, and that is growing. And so those are the pieces, some of the pieces that are growing in trying to connect everyone to the outdoors. So, yeah. And that's a, you know, multiple language that we're looking at and trying to find ability to create those in those languages. So it's a great idea. Thank you.
Representative Trout.
Yeah, I think having maybe just digital literature in other languages
yep.
is a welcoming, kind of like opening
Absolutely.
The door, inviting people to use the parks. Because in our culture, sometimes when we don't get the invitation, we don't use the parks. So that could be an invitation. So yep. thank you. That's all.
Representative Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure if this this question can be answered today, but I'm looking at slide 15, and the Three Rivers Park District is within my district, and I see that they have one of the biggest allocations. So I'm just making a request that if Three Rivers can, or if you guys can follow up with me later to kind of help me I want to know where the funding was spent within Three Rivers District, and we can have a meeting follow-up after that. Thank you.
Director Barajas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, we certainly can follow up with you and get that information for you.
Thank you. I have one more question for you, Director Pierce. As we're the world's changing and you were talking about some of these parks, is there an effort with these funds or other funds to open up some of the e-world, like e-bikes and an e, I thought there was some funding that went towards like some people, you know, for devices that are mobily challenged folks. And I thought there was legacy funds going towards that. And I hope there is, but I don't know if that's, or is that in Greater Minnesota? But someone I thought was, are you funding these or making them available? It just seems to make a lot of sense as, well, you know, we certainly want our physically challenged folks to have access as well.
Chairman, yes, you're correct. So those are one of the biggest projects that we had was called the Track Chair Project. And there are regional park systems that also have those and state park systems that have the track chairs, and those are mobility chairs that really anyone who might have limited mobility, whether it's due to age or ability to go for long hikes or whatever that might be, can use these. And they're it's been a really successful program. It gives people the opportunity to really be independent in the system and not have to rely on others. So it's been very successful, and we want to continue to do those types of things. And I will say, just to get at the language piece, I think the digital piece is the piece that's really growing. And the other side of that is the interpretive information, to having that in multiple language also, which we are starting and continuing to do. So, thank you.
Is the mobile, is the devices you're talking, is that legacy funds or is that something else?
Combination. Part the legacy funds and part probably general fund. Yeah.
And to Representative Heitzman's question, so on the bonding, isn't there bonding money, you know, that goes to the, on the state DNR facilities, you know, I know through the years serving on that committee and this committee, so it's, there's some, how do you, like how much, what is the bonding request for the buildings of the, I think the governor, I heard the presentation, I can't remember the number.
Right, so, thank you, Chairman. The number of the bonding requests, I will tell you that generally the bonding request is for specific projects, right? So we'll request a dollar amount for that specific project. We do a combination of funding, so there's a lot of needs, like we've been talking about. There's a lot of needs for keeping things up and maintaining things. One of the sites that we have within the bonding is the Sudan Underground Mine, which is a maintenance piece on that one. So we do a combination of legacy funds, bonding funds, and then we do have some general fund requests for trail maintenance specifically to try to keep up. And one of the things that we're finding, especially getting at the trail maintenance piece, is we have increased users, and that's great, but that also shortens the life a little bit of those trails, right, because the more things going over them. And then again, we have these weather patterns that are really wet and then really dry. And then, so the system is that lifespan is kind of shortening a little bit. And so that maintenance becomes even more important to keep them up to speed. So it's a combination of things.
Representative Farr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Pierce, so I'm curious, how do we source the land for our trails? Specifically, can we use eminent domain? Can the DNR use eminent domain to purchase land for trails?
We do not use eminent domain. We don't. I don't, you know, I know that we do not use it, so I don't know that if we, like, legally can use it, but we don't use it. So.
Representative Farr.
So then it's just the voluntary basis if it runs across the private property?
Yep.
Then can the DNR use MnDOT when they're doing a project along the road to purchase a right-of-way using eminent domain and then use that as a trail?
So, thank you, Chairman. We would not, I mean, there might, I'm trying to think of situations where they might have already have right-of-way, but we wouldn't create a trail with eminent domain. So it would be access adding to, and usually our trails are along county highways, not state highways necessarily, just because that's less safe and those kind of things. So I am not familiar with any situation where that has happened. I'm looking at Laura because she has probably more information on that, but no, we're not familiar with it.
Representative Farr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And perhaps I'll just follow up with you individually. I'd like to understand that a little bit better.
Okay.
Thank you.
That'd be great. Thank you. Thank you.
Representative Heitzman.
Real quick, Mr. Chair. The proposal you just mentioned from the governor and all funds, it sounds, could be combined. Do we know what that number looks like for ongoing maintenance costs and such?
Representative Heitzman, do you know? Director Pierce?
Yeah, for the general fund, we had $1 million a year, so $2 million for the biennium.
Yeah. Representative Heitzman.
That's what I thought, Mr. Chair. So that's why I just wanted to quickly bring us back, because this ongoing discussion about the ENRTF is approximately $60 million a year. And I'm wondering, Director Pierce, could you use $60 million a year for trails? Would that be enough to repair and restore infrastructure that we already have?
Director Pierce.
Thank you, Chairman. So I think there's a couple of things to think about in this. There's repair, right, and getting things up to where we want them to be. And then there's that ongoing maintenance, because if we can get them up to where we need them, and that's probably a bigger number, right? If we can get them up to where we want them to be, that ongoing maintenance will be less if you can follow it. If you can do like a 10-year maintenance cycle, right, you won't get to the point where you have to replace a building or you have to replace a trail completely or whatever that case may be. So that upfront cost of getting things back into shape, so to speak, would be larger than the ongoing maintenance piece of like a cycle every 10 years. So then you end up within that 10-year period, you visited all your trails that you need to and have maintained them with ever repaving or filling cracks or whatever that might be.
Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Chair Lilly. I think what I am hearing is that we could use those kinds of dollars, up to $60 million potentially per year, although I'm not necessarily hearing that in the answer. I would argue that that's probably just scratching the surface of what we could do in terms of restore and maintain the properties and trail systems and such that we have, the infrastructure needs that we have in Minnesota. But maybe we'll have to circle back. It doesn't sound like the director had an answer today, but there might be another opportunity.
Thank you, Representative Heitzman. There actually was a bill that I've been working on the last couple of years that was brought to me, but they had someone rode every mile of the trails in the state of Minnesota, and they had a camera on the whole time, and you can actually see the video and just see where the bumps are or the pothole, you know, and so the maintenance need is great, and I think it had funding related to that of, and certainly not enough. I think it was like $3 million or something a year to help move along.
There's a lot of work to do.
So thank you.
Thank you.
So Ms. Madsen? Welcome. Go ahead when you're ready, please.
Thank you, Chair Lilly, committee members, staff, and our distinguished guest, Ms. Heinzman. I have an extra pin for you if you'd like it, so I don't want you to be left out, so I'll make sure you get this before you leave. I'm Renee Madsen. I'm the executive director of the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission, and in addition to the pins today, we also have copies of our 25-year legacy plan. This might be helpful for some of you if you haven't seen it previously. It lays out a very good framework for the way the three agencies are operating. Even though we're different, we all do use this as a guide for us. And I'd just like to point out also, Representative Heinzman, if you're looking for a use for that other 60%, we also have trails in Greater Minnesota. So I'd be more than happy to help deplete that fund on behalf of our facilities.
Glad to hear that.
Which, we do have six districts across the 80 counties of Greater Minnesota, all with great needs. Within those 80 counties, we have 13 commissioners and one at large, two in each district and one at large. Those are appointed by the governor. And I'd like to point out that the chair of our commission, Commissioner Rick Anderson, is here today with us. Rick hails from Lyon County, from the beautiful city of Ballaton. So he is here with us today. Throughout our district, as you'll see on the map, we have currently 74 facilities across most of those 80 counties. And of those, 35 are natural resource-based parks, 24 are regional trails, and 15 are special features. And just to give you an idea of what those special features might be, for instance, we have the Cook County Mountain Bike Trail System, and as as Executive Director Pierce was talking about, we have the Lake County Mountain Bike Trail System, and that's the beautiful system that connects up to the Shipwreck Creek campground at Split Rock Lighthouse. So that's one of our designated facilities that was built purposefully to connect with that campground to give campers there a wonderful trail experience. And the interesting thing about that is a lot of our green mountain bike trails connect from that campground into the larger system. So it's a great place to give first-time users a real taste of what that system is like. And then in addition to that, we have 20 designation-eligible facilities. And what that means is in our process, it's a two-step. I'll get into that in just a minute. But we have a two-step process for designating a facility in Greater Minnesota as regionally significant, meaning it is not your local park that's probably quite beautiful, but it is more in line with the metropolitan park system or the DNR park system. It's a large facility. It draws it draws visitors from across a great region, so it's more than just a local system. So in the first phase of becoming designated with the designation application that's reviewed, if you are ranked high, we consider that facility as designation eligible. So in addition to the 74 facilities we have now, 20 are eligible to become designated. What we're waiting on from those facilities is a qualified master plan for review. So in coming years, we know we'll be adding more facilities to our system as well. Our process for adding a facility into our system is a two-step process, the final step in that process being eligible for funding. And it's an interesting system that has evolved over time. The commission was started in 2013, so this is only our 10th year. And one thing that I would tell you that we're very proud of is the fact that we keep changing what we're doing to make sure that as constituents are coming back to us who have applied for either funding or designation, that we're listening to what they have to say. It's not a static process. It's very dynamic. For instance, every year we look at our funding application, and we meet, and we talk about it, and we listen to what people have said and try to determine where we can make things better for them. It's not something that's carved in stone, and we're never going to change it. In fact, we change it a little bit every year based on what we hear. Our designation application is the first step. So if you think you have a great facility somewhere in the 80 counties outside of the metropolitan area, you submit an application online. And that's a high bar, because once you are designated, you have access to legacy funds that not every facility, of course, has access to. So we want to ensure that that facility has a great purpose, a great draw, and serves a regional audience. So that first step is an application, and it's reviewed not by myself. We have two people who work for the commission. We're not only very nimble, but we're very small. There's no bricks and mortar. But we do have a five-member evaluation team, and they're professionals that are retired from Parks and Recreation. One is a former DNR grant manager, and he has a huge wealth of information about the state facilities. But between these five individuals, they're located across the state. If they don't know or have heard about a facility, it would be pretty rare. So they go through our our designation criteria. They pay attention to the application to make sure it's not just a lot of flowery words, but there's actually things to back that up. If that is reviewed high, medium, or low, high is you're eligible to, we invite you to submit a master plan. Medium or low, we ask you to come back. There's usually some comments the evaluation team has made about how you can make that application better. And then there are two of us who work for the commission, and we go visit those facilities. We want to make sure that we understand them. We understand their regional focus. We can ask questions. Sometimes the commissioners will have questions. Sometimes the evaluation team has questions. So the best part of my job is getting to do a lot of driving to lots of great locations in greater Minnesota and look at facilities that become designated later that are fabulous for us. So if you're designated, if you reviewed the application and you rank high, your designation eligible, and then we ask facilities to submit to us a qualified master plan. We have very stringent requirements for what we're looking for in a master plan so that we're reviewing every facility apples to apples. And that's evolved over time as well. So you submit your master plan into our portal that we've developed online for review. And one thing I'd point out about this portal, it's available to everybody. Whether or not you are planning to become designated in the Greater Minnesota Regional System, you have access to this portal to create a master plan. We think master plans are vital to developing a facility and listening to what people in that area want to see in a facility. So we've made this portal available for communities, small and large, well-funded, not to be able to use this portal to develop their own master plan. Generally, facilities and trails would need to hire experts maybe to develop a schematic or to work on the public engagement process. But instead of a master plan costing many, many thousands of dollars, we know that that's the case generally, you can create your own master plan for much smaller dollar amounts. And that makes it much more even playing field for facilities, areas that may not have the resources that other areas do. So it's been a great thing that we've done for our partners, and we've had several agencies actually submit master plans where they've gone from start to finish themselves and created their own master plan. And it prints out a beautiful document when you're done that you can take to anybody, because you can plug and play your pictures as you go. But it's really made it a much more even process for cities and counties that don't have deep pockets to be able to do. And then finally, of course, is the funding application. That's the fun stuff, where facilities can submit to us projects that come out of that qualified master plan then. All of the projects that we look at for funding have to tie back to that master plan in some way, shape, or form. So our selection process I've reviewed just a bit, but I do want to go back to the track wheelchair question you had. And yes, that came out of Greater Minnesota. Well, we all have track wheelchairs in our systems, but last year at a meeting, we had an opportunity to look at how track wheelchairs work. And I would tell you that I had not been on one before, wasn't particularly familiar with them. It's an amazing, amazing thing. You know, there are many ways that people can't enjoy the outdoors as they've been used to. And as I get older, I hate to admit it, but I can see a time when I'm going to need a little assistance, too, to do what I enjoy doing. Hopefully that's many years down the road, but we're trying to think more broadly about what's stopping people from doing things that they used to enjoy doing, or how to engage people where they haven't been able to do these activities. So the commissioners set aside out of our grant round from last year, the grants that we did, a sum of money to encourage our facilities to apply for track wheelchair funding. And we were able to come up with an amount working with Action Manufacturing out of Marshall, Minnesota, who produces these chairs. They came down on their pricing, so there was a small gap for a match of only $500. And we had three wonderful applications that came in for these wheelchairs. They all wanted to do amazing things with them, and some were upgrading their wheelchairs to be able to do more things with them. And at the end of the day, we thought that awarding one grant to one of the three facilities would be a travesty. So the other two wheelchair grants are going to come out of our operating budget, because we just felt it was really important to be able to do that. And it's going to be a component of this next granting round that we do as well. Part of the deal with these wheelchair grants was that if you did get a track wheelchair, you had to make it available for facilities in the system to try, to see if it was something that they wanted to do within their system. And the way that the grants worked out, there was one in Duluth, there's one in Lyon County, and one in Wright County. So it really worked out statewide, pretty good distribution that other facilities will be able to use those wheelchairs in their system and hopefully go forward and apply for a grant in this coming round. So just quickly, our grant funding application opens up on April 1 or thereabouts of every year. We grant annually, so our new funding round will be coming up shortly. It closes on July 31st. We typically get between 19 and 24 applications for our designated facilities, always for more funds than we have available, just like our partners. And then we spend the next 6 weeks driving around the state to look at these applications, make sure, again, that we understand them, we're fully apprised of what they're looking for in these applications, and then do a report back to the commissioners where we've scored our applications based on criteria that we have. And the commissioners spend the next 2.5 to 3 months talking about the applications, asking us more questions, vetting them further, until finally we whittle that down to the proposals for funding that we'll be bringing forth this session, which are here. We had 17 applications that were qualified in this last round. Happily, we were able to grant funding fully to 14 of them. And what I'd point out to you here, you'll see some big numbers. The commission is very fortunate that in our grant funding, we don't have a ceiling. So if you have a project that's particularly costly to build out, you'll notice Olmsted County, Oxbow Park, and Zolman Zoo, $2 million, a little bit more. That zoo is, that campground is replacing one that was built in a floodplain. Wasn't the best idea 40 years ago or so when it was created. It floods out on a pretty regular basis. So they're going to move that campground to a different area of the park, add more camping sites to it, more handicapped camping sites, as well as some camper cabins that have been requested. And they came to us also with a very healthy match. But I want to point out that this is an example of what we can do when you don't have a ceiling. You don't have those applicants in the hamster wheel of $400,000 grants every year for a number of years while costs escalate. We can do the facility. We can do the build-out. We can do what they're looking for, be it connecting people with the outdoors, taking care of what we have, creating and acquiring. But it's done, and now it's done, and it's available for public use, which is the best we could all hope for. So it's ready for Minnesotans to enjoy. And likewise, we have a lot of smaller grants. You'll notice one for Northerly Park in the Northwest Angle. That's a $70,000 grant, and that grant is to enhance their master plan. They did a master plan in our portal, but we all recognize there's more that they could do with that park. It's the first place that you come to, Jim's Corner, when you cross from Canada back into the U.S. in the Northwest Angle. There are some wonderful plans that they have, but we felt they could take it one step higher. There's a lot of wonderful interpretation and history in that area, and our hope is that when they start working with a consultant, they can get it the higher level that we felt it deserved. So while they did come to us with a plan, the commission has on occasion granted funds to just take it up a notch for areas that maybe had more to offer than was being shown in that plan. So that's a look at the types of things that we do for our grants. And we're very pleased to be able to do that on an annual basis with our 20% share of the legacy funds. We're very grateful for those. And this is just another look at some of the variety that we have across our system. You'll notice the mountain bikes. We have a lot of wonderful mountain bike trails in districts 1 and 2 particularly. The picture on the lower left is Phelps Mill County Park in Otter Tail County. It's a wonderful facility. It's also a special feature, but it's just a fabulously historic area. And they recently got into our system and were successful in applying for a grant for boardwalks through a very sensitive area. And that's probably going to be the first of several grants they'll come back to us for, but it's certainly a remarkable facility and something that deserves to be visited and known about by everyone. We've got our horse riders in Lyon County, Garvin Park, which is a spectacularly large park. We have the Northwest Sporting Center in Beltrami County. So that's an example of something that's a little bit different, but it's a sport that's growing tremendously. The commission helped them from the very beginning. And we were a small piece, actually. They were very successful in gaining lots of partners to build this facility on 320 acres in Beltrami County. And it's pretty spectacular, really, and has grown over time. And then finally, Spirit Mountain Recreation Area in Duluth, Minnesota. So that is just a brief overview of what the commission does. On the table and in the back as well is our 2022 policy and planning piece. I've given this to most of you over time, a few more meetings with some of you yet, but this is available for your review as well, and of course, we're always available to answer any questions you might have.
So thank you, Ms. Madsen, Director Madsen. I really want to thank you for that brochure you just held up. It's I think it's one of the best pieces that I've seen, you know, come through this committee, as far as uses of the funds and how your plans are and how you plan to use them. So I hope members have an opportunity to really look at it and study it. And I hope others in the room are watching and listening, because I think that's important that we know where all the funds are going in, you know, every different fund. And I just think it's really helpful. It's a bit of a challenge to our friends next to you. I hope they are listening. And, you know, not that they're doing bad work, but it just, it's nice to see exactly where the funds are going. Representative Heitzman, I believe you have a question.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. When folks were initially given the opportunity to decide whether or not to vote for the legacy amendment, I think that what we're hearing about today is primarily what in greater Minnesota they were expecting. And it's really terrific to see all of the implementation of legacy dollars in this subject area. Sometimes there's questions as to what was the voter's intent, and we speak to that from time to time as legislators, try to sort of channel that, and I'm not sure we get it right all the time, but the theme that I've sort of been hitting on today, I'm just going to continue and just ask quickly Director Mattson, and maybe you have these numbers, maybe you don't. If you don't, that's okay, offline we can discuss this, but do you have a ballpark idea what the system needs are as it relates to infrastructure and that restoration and enhancement of those facilities that are inside of your service area, what the annual need might be?
Director Mattson.
Chair Lilly, committee members, that is an excellent question. I don't have it off the top of my head, but I can get you those numbers, because as we look at the master plans that are provided to us and as we check off various capital projects and enhancement projects that happen, we do keep track of that in our system. So I would be more than happy to give you that information, because, again, as we're pointing out things, grants that are coming through, that is taking care of particular pieces of master plans, and we have the idea of what those build-outs are as we go along.
Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Chair. And I would extend that request to each of those here today. That would be helpful, I think, as we're continuing to try to figure out what the future might look like for, as I mentioned earlier, the ENRTF and what the system really needs annually. I think that that would give legislators a good tool to sort of consider as a benchmark going forward.
Representative Chop.
Thank you, Chair. My first question is, what's the minimum acreage, to put a park into this application?
Ms. Mattson.
Chair Lilly, Representative Cha. For a natural resource-based park, the minimum is 100 acres. Our special feature parks can be much smaller because they have a particularly unique special feature to them that's not found other places. But 100 acres is our minimum.
Representative Cha.
Yes, and then my second question is that is this application process open to indigenous communities if they wanted to convert some of their land into parks?
Director Mattson.
Chair Lilly, Representative Cha, that's a great question, and that's one of the things that we are changing about our process. We did come up with a designation called a cooperative partnership, and that allows us to have facilities. Generally, the way the statute is written is that it is available for cities and counties in the 80 counties outside the metropolitan area. So that eliminated quite a few indigenous communities from being able to apply. The supportive partnership piece of this allows us to be able to do that. So if there is a particular facility on land not owned by the city or county, there are things that we can do in support of that entity that would enhance that facility, even though it is not technically part of the system that we would look at normally. So that's an example of someone coming to us with and having long conversations about how do we better connect this, because our charge is clear that it's cities and counties, but this is a way that we can be supportive to facilities outside of that charge.
Representative Chau.
Thank you.
Do you have a follow-up? Representative Hussein.
Just to follow up Representative Chai's question, help you? Is there any way we could do to kind of the statute so those individuals could be able to apply direct for that funding?
Director Mattson? Or...
Well, Chair Lilly, Representative Hussein, we'd have to look at that change. We were hoping by making this supportive partnership change, that would allow more of a partnership across tribal lands, indigenous entities, and actually others. I mean, what we're trying to do there is open it up to facilities like the Superior Hiking Trail or the North Country Trail, where technically we cannot support that whole system because of where it runs, but but we can be supportive of trailheads, repairs, camping sites. We think of fishing piers, kayaking launches, those sorts of things within facilities. So at this point, I'd say give us time to see how this plays out and see if we need to make further changes, because we are open to that. We just need to see how it's working at this point.
Representative Hussein.
If that makes sense.
I just thank you, and I look forward to working with you. And we always talk about equity and disparities, and we want to make sure that people have opportunity to do so. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm sorry to get on the praise train for the greater Minnesota folks, but here's another, maybe you want to make a comment on the last couple of years we've, in this committee, we have been talking about diversity, and you listened, and you made an effort. And to your credit, I maybe you don't want to say it, but I mean, it actually didn't go well. But I give you credit because you're trying, and I hope others are trying. But maybe you want to speak to that for a second. And so you spun off some of your money, if I remember, and then, but maybe you can go into better detail. And I think it's good for members to hear.
Thank you.
But you're still trying. It was just.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair Lilly. And that's something I had shared with you in the meeting, and I'm glad that we could have that prior. Our system is not owned or managed, none of these 74 facilities, by the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission. They are all independently owned and operated. And so we have little weight to bear as to how facilities come to us for funding applications. But the commissioners recognized a few years ago we need to do more around connecting people with the outdoors. Let's make sure that it's an easy ask for our facilities so that they're not weighing, do we rehab a facility that really is tired and worn out? Do we build something new that's been asked for in this master plan, or do we connect people with the outdoors? And you know where that goes often. It's, well, we have a really aging facility we need to fix, or everybody wants us to build this new whatever. By offering connecting people with the outdoors as a separate grant entity within our bigger grants, people could apply for both. So now it's not a either or, it's a yes and, so that we could encourage people to do those connecting pieces and make sense in their communities, be it transportation so that you can get people there who can't afford the transportation, schools can come in, use your imagination, whatever that is. So last year we set aside $200,000 for, we had been doing the connecting piece and we just weren't getting enough creative ideas that we were hoping for, something that would be just out of the box that you hadn't thought of because you didn't want to not get accepted for this grant. So we made it pretty open and said, come to us with any ideas that you've had about how to creatively get more people into your facility and make it easier and make it welcoming and think of all, everyone, one Minnesota. And so we filled out that grant process and we had some wonderful connecting people with the outdoor grants, but they weren't exactly what we were hoping we might seed for ideas. So It was successful in that we got some really great connecting pieces. A lot of it was equipment that will be available for people to try at no charge, and that's terrific. Others were programming, but not the really kind of out-of-the-box thinking we had hoped for. So we're going to continue with that and try to encourage people to just think as creatively as they can about what would welcome someone into your park. You know, you brought up exactly different languages. We don't want that to be a barrier. So that was an example we gave, and it didn't necessarily go as far anywhere. I'll be honest, not as far as we hoped, didn't go where we wanted. But we're going to continue to do that because it can't be a one and done, it didn't work, so let's just drop it. We still need to work with everyone to encourage that kind of thinking and make it available for everyone. So thank you, Chair Lilly.
Thank you, Representative Chaw.
Yeah, I just want to add to that. Sometimes having a person that looks like the community advocating for these parks and stuff is going to go a long way. You know, having the literature is not enough, but then having a person that can speak the language or understand the barriers of communities and, you know, just, you know, loss in translation things, right? And so I encourage that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Chaw. So I think we're basically kind of there. Thank you very much for the presentations. And certainly we'll have you back as we transition into more of the funding side. But I definitely wanted our members to hear what's going on in your areas. It's you know, I know coming out of COVID, it's continued to be popular, and I'm always, you know, stunned by the numbers in the metro. You know, I'm a metro member, but you know, 65 million users is incredible. And you know, to think like in Minneapolis, you know, where they had to shut down streets like during COVID, and then now the interests are higher. But we certainly want these, you know, people. I love the ICANN program that you're doing that, and I certainly hope we can have more of that and all over the state and accessibility. I'd like to, personally, I'd like to see more fishing piers, you know, all over. I know there's one that's fairly close to me, and it was done, you know, by legacy funds, because I see the logo. Mostly I see it in the winter because it's on the lakes. You know, when you're cross-country skiing, you can see it because it's like there. And also it's interesting because those are done by, I think it was MinCor, and I don't know if MinCor is still building those fishing piers or not. But Ms. Barhorst, do you know if they're still building them? Or?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if they're still building those, but you're right. They're much more visible in the winter on the white snow lakes.
But I just want to thank you for coming. And I was really touched particularly today by the library program. And it just seems like something that we could certainly add to, like, the metro system would make a lot of sense to me to, you know, I think some people might be priced out of some of the county parks or some of them to entrance, you know, to get their family in there. So just make, and maybe it's available already, I don't know, but Ms. Barhorst.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just add that the Metro Parks system is free to all users. Specific programs might cost money. If you're gonna ski, there's a ski pass, especially on groom trails, typically because of the cost for grooming and maintaining the trail themselves, or if they're snowmaking. But otherwise, access to the parks themselves is free.
Some of the counties do have like a vehicle fee. I appreciate your coming in today. And again, members, thank you for rushing over after, you know, session and getting here. And please be available for questions, everyone. And with that, we are adjourned.
Thank you.